Very much, Atul. It's a great honor and a great pleasure, an honor to be a panelist with two eminent world quality speakers. As Atul mentioned, I invented this concept of the device. I am one of the co-founders of the company Signify Medical Technologies and also their current chief medical officer. I do have associations with other industry partners who support me through educational activities and also act as a medical advisor for them. What is this concept that I'm talking about, daytime transoral or intraoral therapy? The concept is very much as Atul and Peter have alluded to, that the airway collapsibility around the oropharynx is orientated around the tongue or the genoglossus function. And the tongue or the genoglossus is the predominant dysfunction, if you could say so, that often leads to this oropharyngeal closure during these individuals with sleep disorder breathing. So the concept really is to change the physiological behavior of the tongue by using a very specific type of therapy of neuromuscular therapy through the daytime, such that when the person and individual does go to sleep, the function of the tongue has changed, the genoglossus, and the airway obstruction is alleviated. So it's simply that concept. What is the product? The product is a three-piece product. The black in the middle, where you can see a mouthpiece turned upside down, and you can see some gray pads. Now, these are essentially conductive silicone, which is encased in a non-conductive body with a USB allowing it to communicate with the main brains of the product, which is the control unit, which has a rechargeable battery up to 6 to 7 therapies at a time. And it then gives very low level of energy through the USB port through this conductive pathway to be able to transmit it to the tongue. And the device sits around the tongue with two of these flanges above, two flanges below. And then you need a third device to control it. And the third device can be your smartphone app, or if you're not inclined towards using apps, you can also have a remote control. So the concept essentially is a very simplistic one. You attach the two devices together. The minute they attach up, they become live. It starts trying to communicate with its remote control or the app, as in this situation. And once the Bluetooth connectivity happens, the app will talk you through the steps to check the device and then initiate the therapy. The therapy will count down and will gradually run down to the 20-minute period. During this time, you can be mobile. You can be, obviously, we would not like you to be handling machinery, but you don't have to be static in a position. The clock runs down automatically to 20 minutes. You have the function here of either pausing, stopping, and the key factor is that the end user is entirely in control of the intensity to be required. And the intensity required is enough to create stimulation. Supra-threshold stimulation does not improve the outcome. So here, essentially, what you're going to do is awake therapy. And you will see on the right what the tongue does during this therapy period. And you can see some very small pulsating movements, which is what you really feel. You feel a pulsation. Because it's a silicon conductive material, it doesn't give you any particular intensive feeling as you would anticipate with electrical therapy. As Atul alluded originally, it's daytime therapy, 20 minutes once a day. And we have efficacy data related to snoring and mild sleep apnea. You can see that there is therapy time, and then there is a rest period, and the frequencies that are being used are very specific for changes that we're looking for. Well, why do we think this is going to work? Now, we know that anatomy, and being an ENT surgeon, being involved as part of the sleep team, I've done a lot of anatomical manipulation to assist individuals with sleep disorder breathing. And these are a list of some of the common anatomical features we associate with this condition. But we also know that individuals may have these abnormal anatomical configurations, but do not suffer with sleep apnea. And as Atul alluded, that there are certain people who have active responses, and there are others who do not seem to have these active responses. So the key factor is that there is, on top of the anatomy, a certain physiological change that is undoubtedly affecting how the airway behaves during sleep. These are the normal physiological changes that we see, which are central or lung volume changes or lower airway reactivity and increase of resistance. But we also know that there are certain abnormal changes that occur, which have been alluded to with the endotypes that we're talking about the high loop gain, the abnormal arousal thresholds, but also in there lies this component of a non-responsive upper airway dilator. And the tongue and the genoglossus is the largest upper airway dilatory muscle. So undoubtedly, if you concentrate an effort in that, and as Atul quite revealed with some of his studies, that actually that is the predominant dilator in the upper airway. So that's where we're aiming our therapy at. We also know that individual sleep apnea have a different level of pre-crit, the ability or the predisposition for the airway to collapse during sleep varies, and individuals with obstructive sleep apnea may often collapse at positive airway pressures, conversely to normal individuals who require negative airway pressures. And we also know that if the airway is active, the pre-crit changes to more towards a normal phase. So actually making the airway active will reduce the collapsibility of the airway during sleep. Key factor here, which Atul's already mentioned, endurance. It is not a question of making the muscle stronger. It's a question of making the muscle more endurant, fatigue resistance. And that's the feature that we're really concentrating on with our therapy. What we have done, we have a problem, and we have a solution that has been widely available to us for over 20 years. And there's a lot of research in using neuromuscular electrical stimulation in skeletal muscle for rehabilitation, for a gamut of different pathological processes. And why this is useful for our particular problem are these changes. These changes in particular, which are biochemical, in other words, the oxidative enzymatic activity is improved, the glycolytic enzyme activity is reduced, and there's a key shift of the muscle type fibers from type 2 to type 1-2A. What does this really mean? And often in this kind of types of muscles and fast firing, low firing, what does that really account to? And this graph at the bottom just gives us a very simplistic approach and a clear, simple idea. So what we have is that with snoring and obstructive sleep apnea, there's very good pathological evidence that there is increase in type 2B and a reduction in type 1 and 2A fibers. The type 2B fibers, the key factor being, if you look at resistance to fatigue, is very low. They can create a large protrusion force, which is evident by the data presented by Atul, that the protrusion force of the tongue is higher than controls, but actually they have a high fatigability component to it. Whereas the type 2A and 1 fibers have a much higher resistance to fatigue. And it's these are the athletes and the long distance runners, versus these are more like the bodybuilders who have big muscles, but actually cannot sustain the activity for that long. So we're using very specific kind of therapies, low frequency electrical therapies, that allow us to create that biochemical and physiological change in the muscle fiber type in this area of sleep disorder breathing. So our original trial was really looking at snoring treatment because we wanted to see whether there's any change in snoring, which was an obvious modality to look at. And the first trial was undertaken with our colleague Boris Stuck in Germany, who recruited 30 patients, 27 completed the trial. And we essentially looked at 2 weeks of subjective assessment by the bed partner, the effort sleepiness score of the patient, and the PSQI. So sleep questionnaires and subjective assessments. 6 weeks of therapy at that point, twice daily. And we remeasured these indices towards the end of the 2 week of the 6 week period. That original data in the 27 patients shows that the visual analog scale on a 0 to 10, where 10 is horrific snoring, dropped both in primary snorers and mild obstructive sleep apnea. So it was a first proof of concept positive study, but obviously this is subjective data and it has a lot of issues related to its credibility because it's a bed partners report. So the next trial that we did was a multi-center objective assessment of snoring and the indices of sleep apnea at the same time. Same study protocol. The red details the differences in that we did a much more detailed clinical assessment, looking at the upper airway anatomy and endoscopy examinations. But instead of just using visual analog scale, we actually used two consecutive nights of sleep study before the therapy. And this time we reduced the therapy to once daily because it became apparent from our original study that twice daily compliance for a busy person can be problematic. And we did two nights of sleep study at the end of the 6-week period to assess the change on the sleep study. So in particular, we took the WatchPat, which has a validated snoring sound channel together with validated sleep apnea indices. And this was undertaken as a primary investigator was Big Kotecha in London, supported by Peter Baptista and Mariana Carrasco from Spain. So it was a multi-center trial. And we have data here on 115 patients, 65 of which had mild OSA, which Atul kindly presented earlier on. And I'm going to talk really about the 115 with respect to their snoring changes. So the demographics very similar to what presented before. They're not overtly obese, but we have a range of 20 to 34. The inclusion criteria was below 35. Most of them actually had mild sleep apnea. And most of them were men, which is not surprising. The changes that we particularly looked at, so we looked at multiple indices here, and these are just talking about the snoring changes because Atul's talked about the sleep apnea and the changes in HI and ODI. So we looked at all snoring generated above 40 decibels. So that includes all snoring sound created and what percentage of time that individual snoring and looked at the change in that time frame. So the percentage so that dropped by 42%. So 30% of the time these individuals are snoring, which dropped to about 17.8 at after the 6-week therapy time. And similar reflections are also evident in the change in their VAS, which goes from 0 to 10, which dropped by 41%. As this is not really a sleepy group, it's a mixed group of snorers and mild sleep apnea, the average effort sleepiness score was not particularly high, as you would expect, but there was definitely a change in that, as it was in the PSQI, and all of these indices were statistically significant. So the key factors here really is to show the correlation that objective measures change quite significantly with this therapy, which are equally reflected in the subjective assessments being presented by the bed partner. When we looked actually at the different intensities of sound, so we can take a threshold at 40 decibels, which is including of all types of snoring, or you have greater than 50 decibels, which is what may be sometimes be called epic snoring or very high intensity snoring. What is evident is that that kind of change that we are seeing is consistent irrespective of the intensity. So it's not just a high intensity snoring is reducing in isolation. It actually seems to affect the whole spectrum. Though it's clear that we have a greater effect on the really horrific high epic snoring levels. All of these are also statistically significant. The distribution. So we found that 90% of individuals showed some change. Now, some change doesn't always equate to clinically effective change, but it gives you a spectrum of what the distribution was. So you can see 11 out of the 115 had no change in their sleep objective assessment. And then, as you would anticipate, this is a somewhat of a normal distribution graph where you get a certain percentage of people who get a lot of response, and then you have a percentage of people who get a very minimal response in this area. The key factors being that average of 42% change, but also 40% of people showed more than 50% reduction in their snoring. So if you take for reference point, a lot of surgical therapies, when you look at objective change in snoring sound, you're really looking between 20 to 40% change at best in most of the surgical interventions. And that also depends on where along the period, whether you're measuring this at 6 months or 2 years. as we know, that there is a certain trail off that often occur over time. All treatments do have some side effects, and very similar to the figures that Atul mentioned, that the commonest one really was excessive salivation, as you would anticipate with mandibular advancement devices. Anything that you put into the mouth will stimulate excessive saliva. But most of these are not really threatening, are low level. And the key factor also is, as the individual uses the product, the incidence of the side effects drops away. So in the first week, 12 of them participants reported some excess salivation, which drops to 4 individuals towards the end of the 6 weeks as they get used to the therapy. We're also now looking at long-term effects. And although we don't have data on the whole 115 individuals, we have data here on 50 individuals, and we're following them up now with consecutive two-night sleep studies at 3 months, and then subsequently at 6 months, and then subsequently at near. And we're also monitoring their compliance, because when they use the product through an app, we're able to identify what their compliance is with the use of the product. And this is a mixed gap back at present. But what you can see is that the effect of the therapy lasts longer than just the therapeutic period, especially when we look at some of the mild OSA indices. And that seems to be irrelevant to the fact that the individual may or may not be using it. But this is a mixed back group, which we need to break up. The numbers are too small to split into the users and non-users at this stage. But this is data that is very crucial, and this is data we'll continue to monitor and advise you about as we go. So I think what we present today is a novel, a unique, a different way of potentially approaching the problem. I think what is unique about what we're doing is we are trying to reverse some of the pathophysiological processes associated with sleep disorder breathing, getting away from the concept of simply being an anatomical splint, as some of the therapy options often are. Crucial aspect, I do believe, that helps with quality of sleep also is that there is no nighttime variable. This is a daytime therapy. The individual sleeps without any devices on them through the night. There's no need for customization. And I think we have shown that there's a very low burden of use on the patient for this, with a very low side effect profile associated with it. I think we do have efficacy when we look at mild snoring, sleep apnea and snoring. And I think it is really powerful and valuable to see that some of the mechanistic data that Atul is creating actually backs the concept of what we feel we're trying to do with this technology. But clearly, we still need to accumulate a lot more data, which is where we stand. So I'd like to just say thank you very much for this opportunity to share this concept.